From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G. and Ursula Show with G. Scott and Ursula Voitine.
Good morning. Happy Friday. And thank you for listening to the G. and Ursula Show. Good morning, Ursula.
Good morning, G. You know, after our last discussion, I've been rethinking my whole tipping structure and who I need to be tipping. So I've been like trying to plot it out now.
I had some people already hit me up, Ursula, and they said, I missed it. We heard you guys were talking about tipping. So therefore, there's still more that we have to say about tipping. So probably a little bit later in this segment here, we will talk about that because I got one more point that I need to make up. But right now, we got a guess.
We do. And I want to set up with this, in case you didn't hear us talk about it yesterday, there is a new report out that projects that the number of Americans who are homeless could double in 2 years because of the pandemic. And despite an eviction moratorium that is in place, there are still people who are losing their homes through no fault of their own. And one of those people is joining us now. Karina Lauer was going to school and working at a law office in Tacoma at the beginning of the pandemic. And she was let go from her job in March and has been out of work since. In June, Karina left her townhome in Tacoma to go on a road trip. And then she found out she had no place to return to when she got back. Good morning, Karina. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning.
So talk about that. Let's go back to June. You went on that road trip. Why weren't you allowed to come back to your home?
Several hours into our trip, my neighbor from downstairs, she lived in the mother-in-law unit below me, contacted me to let me know that water was coming into her unit. So it was going from my bathroom on my second floor through the kitchen on my first floor and into her unit. She told me that I actually was lost in the desert when she was texting me that they had a key. I had left a key with my neighbors just in case something happened.
Oh, go ahead.
No, we didn't say anything.
Yeah, so go ahead.
No, so the next day, the manager of the unit contacted me and said, hey, you know, there's been a flood and there is a lot of damage and, you know, when are you going to be coming home? I had said, I'll come home on the 3rd. And he said, okay, well, it should be ready by then. The following day, he messaged me and said, hey, the ceiling has caved in. You can't come back to this unit right now. We're going to find a place for you. So that's what happened. There was massive damage.
Okay, so it sounded like it went on for a bunch of time, and then I understand from what you told our producer, you never got another place, and then you found out that they were going to increase the amount of rent that you were going to be charged if you wanted to go back.
When we were driving back up, he told me they would find another place. And then several days later, we were driving back up and I texted and said, hey, you know, where are we going to go? We're coming back up. Do you have an Airbnb for us? He told us he'd find one in the neighborhood because that's what they had to do. And he said, hey, and this was as we're driving back. I mean, I need a place to go. He says, hey, you know, the owners are really sorry, but you just have to move. They'll give you your deposit back. And I was like, well, you know, I don't have anywhere else to go. So, you know, I don't know what to do here. What should we do? And then we did go back and forth a whole bunch of times. I contacted the city and the city said, hey, they can't send you out. They can't evict you. They can't, it's called a constructive eviction. They can't do that. So they need to relocate you and they need to pay you relocation costs. They can't just make you move. So at that point they said they'd put me into the lower unit and then that just wasn't ready. They kept saying, hey, you could move in. We'd show up to move in and it wouldn't be ready. My kids would pick out a room and it wouldn't be ready. So then they finally sent me a 20-day notice to vacate. After three times of telling me I could move in, they sent me a notice to vacate. So I contacted the city and I had the city come do an inspection because they weren't allowed to do that. At that point, they said, hey, you know, we will relocate you. You cannot move back in. We're not, they just wouldn't repair it. They didn't want me to move back in. After I did finally vacate in November, they repaired it 8 days later and then charged $1,000 more for rent than what I was paying, because they could. It was a lovely home that wasn't maintained while I was there. At this point, it was remodeled, had a view of the water, and they could charge a lot more than what they were charging me and what I could afford.
Great. Let me ask you this. Do you feel like your landlord was trying to make you leave in any ways during a pandemic while you're kind of out of a job, and so that they can rent the place for much more? That was the ultimate goal?
Oh, yes, 100%. Yes. They are business partners. They are investment owners. They've never lived in the home. They've never lived in Tacoma. They did not like the area. And it was very clear that that's what they were doing, is just trying to charge more. Which, I mean, it was worth it. It's a lovely home. It's worth more than what I was paying, I think. But I mean, the amount of money that they are charging for it is, it's crazy. And the rent in all of Tacoma is so high right now that I was priced out of Tacoma. I couldn't live there at all. I mean, there was just no rentals right now because of the moratorium. So I'm in this position where I do agree with the moratorium. I do agree that people shouldn't be evicted, but I did pay rent. I used my savings to pay rent. And then after that, I used all of my savings for places to stay and for traveling
I want to talk about this for a second. I mean, the fact that you went through your savings, and it was a hard time during that time, because oftentimes when people talk about people that are homeless, most people think that it's someone sleeping in tents, and I, for one, have been homeless and slept in my car and everything. But as some people are sleeping in cars, like you, Karina, you and your kids, you guys, sounds like you couch surfed, if you will. Did your children know your family didn't have a home?
So they knew that we couldn't go home. That was really hard. My daughter had just turned 8. My son was 12 when this happened. He turned 13 during it. My daughter would go, I mean, that was the hardest. She wants to be in Tacoma. She loves Tacoma. She's very into neighborhood. She always knows the neighborhood she lives in. So she was like, Old Town. I want to go to Old Town. And she would cry, you know, at night. And I would be so angry. That's the only time that I really got that angry and not optimistic. So they knew that, but they did not. I just made it an adventure. She got to go see her cousin several times, and that was lovely. They live in Nevada, and we got to go stay at kind of fun hotels. It was interesting because there's a contrast in what I'm saying. You know, it's not safe. COVID is not safe. We need to make sure we wear masks. We need to make sure we do this. But then we're staying at hotels. So they had questions about that. But I did make it an adventure. We got to see Boise while we drove down. You know, we know the capital now of Idaho and of Utah, and we made it educational, but still maintaining safety. So they didn't. It was me carrying that burden.
And Karina, you had reached out yesterday because we had the conversation about how the number of homeless could double in the next couple of years. And you had said, I never imagined this would be me. Talk to us about the feelings of that.
Yeah, I had savings. I had built that up since I got a divorce, 5 years ago, and I lived in a 2-bedroom apartment with my kids, and I didn't have a room, and they did. So we, you know, built up from there. We had a lovely home, and I had built up savings, which was very important so that I could always feel secure. So I didn't think that. And actually, you know, when my daughter would see encampments, and she would say, what if we become homeless? And I would say, honey, you know, that is not going to happen. But of course I do know, you know, I've worked in the social work field. I've worked, with offenders. I've worked with people who have addiction and have been homeless, and I have truly met people who have gone from having everything to having nothing. But to be perfectly honest, in my experience, it has been people who struggle with addiction. That's just my experience, though, of course, because of where I worked. So So I did not. It was very interesting to see that could happen. It was heartbreaking. And then to watch, you know, we couldn't get into a place. I don't have a job. No place is going to rent to somebody who doesn't have a job, even if I have savings, even if I have this. So I've had to spend more money on other places to watch that kind of dwindle away. That was awful, too.
I want to ask about this, because some of my hardest times, like during the day when I would wake up, back in the day when I slept in my car, during the day I'd have optimism and I'd go and seize the day and I'd try to go be great. But for some reason, my hardest times are at night. And just hearing you just right now saying, because the biggest thing as a parent you try to do is you try to protect your children from knowing some of the harsh realities that you're going through. My question for you is this: how did you deal with the emotions at nighttime when you're faced with your real reality?
I think I am a very, very optimistic person, and it's easy for me to, I guess, to say, you know, hey, here's what I'm going to do next. Here's the next step. Here's what we can do. And as long as I had, you know, kind of the next place to go, I guess. And I do, and I have a partner that I was able to be with, who is incredibly helpful. It was easier to maintain that for me. I guess sometimes I would get angry and sad. And yeah, I just wanted to know what was going to happen, but I guess as long as it was in the air, I was okay. And then when it ended up that we did in fact lose our home, I moved out, everything was out. That was pretty bad. So at that point, I just got to look towards the optimism of being able to eventually be in the next place. I was very fortunate in having family, in having savings, in having my partner, where, you know, we could have a place at night, so we didn't have to be in our car. That would be a very different thing. And I worry. I mean, I just think that there are people out there who don't have the family support system that I do, where it would have to happen like that. It's just crazy. It's awful.
Karina.
And it's from a system that was built so that we didn't have to endure this. So the system that's built so that people would not lose their homes is helping people to charge so much more money and then looking for ways to get people out of their homes.
And that needs to change. Yeah. Karina, we really appreciate you. Whenever we talk about the homelessness crisis, we understand it is such a complex issue and there's so many parts to it, but we just wanted to put a face and a voice to someone, because I think we often forget that when we talk about homeless, it could be someone that we see every single day and we have no idea what their struggle is. And I just thank you for sharing your story this morning. And we wish you the very best, Karina. Thank you.
Thank you so much.